British Columbia is home to over 26 Aboriginal languages, all of which are now considered endangered. Six other languages have faded away, taking with them a shared cultural memory. The Musqueam people, whose traditional territory covers much of the area now known as the Greater Vancouver Regional District, is one group that risks losing its language. Adeline Point was the last first language speaker of the Musqueam Hunkaminam dialect, and she passed away in 2002. Now, the Musqueam Band and the University of British Columbia's First Nations Languages Program are reviving the language through courses that are open to UBC students and to Musqueam Band members. Larry Grant is a Musqueam elder and a UBC adjunct professor who teaches in the program, and he's joined us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Larry, and thanks for joining us.
Morning. Thank you for asking me.
So you grew up in traditional Musqueam territory. Did you grow up speaking Hunkaminam?
As far as I know, I spoke it as a child, but then I stopped speaking for about 40 years and then began speaking again in 1998 when I enrolled in the language program at UBC. And now I'm assisting and teaching the language through the UBC First Nations Languages Program. And I'm beginning to learn it all over again. So,
when did the Musqueam people stop using Hunkaminam on a daily basis?
It was probably my mother's generation, and it was probably around the 70s when they stopped using it as on a daily basis, and we only heard it as a ceremonial language after that. So. And today it's a big struggle to bring it back to everyday use.
So tell us about that you said you joined the First Nations Languages Program as a student. What was it like for you to begin to relearn and remember your own language?
Well, when I first enrolled in 1998, it was my mind told me that I didn't know anything about my language. But then once I got into relearning the language and hearing the words that were down there, many things began to fall out of my memory, and all of a sudden it was sort of a freaky experience where all of a sudden you're talking and trying to say some words, and then other images would fall out or other words would fall out of your mind, and it was as if my mother was speaking to me from the grave, and that was kind of very spooky at times. But it's been a really rewarding experience now that I'm looking back on it. So that's really what happened to me.
Did you find that there were certain words and phrases that you didn't know you knew, but that had been stored away in your memory somehow?
Yes, We would be talking about stories or words or sentences, and then all of a sudden a word would fall out, would come from my memory, which I was not aware of, and I would have the right terminology. It would just come right out, and that's the part that was scary, that you really didn't know how much memory you have stored away and how much you can call back from memory, even though you're not calling back. It just comes out on its own, and it's triggered by either something happening in the classroom or happening at night or in your dreams. In the second year, I began to dream of old people, and they would be talking to me in Hunkaminam, and it was scary because in our culture, when old people come to you in dreams, it's like you're ready to go with them to the other side. And it was something that I had a difficult time with. It was scary whether they were here to help me or here to take me away. And that was quite an experience. So that was something.
And now, in addition to your own process of remembering this language, you spend a lot of time teaching others the language. What are the challenges that you face when teaching the language to people who may not have their own memory of ever having spoken it?
It's quite an experience when you see them, the students sit there and they begin to realize exactly what the word means and how it's made up. And then the other thing about it is a student that doesn't have any memory or knowledge of the language still translates language into contemporary English, and you have to bring them back 300 years to say, no, this is prior to contact, and you need to understand the language did not have any European influence on it. So you can't take a feminist view or a sexist view of it. It's something that was created long before those terms, English terms, were brought into use. So that was, and it's really something to watch that.
Is it something that people in your community are, I know learning a language takes a huge amount of time. Is it something that people in your community are able to master in a short time, or is it frustrating for some people to have to dedicate a lot of time to it?
Language learning is really a lifelong experience, because as life goes on, things happen and you have to create new words. And until you understand the real basic of the language, you're not able to expand on it and create new words for new terminology, like a television set or a computer or a telephone or a jet airplane or a rocket to the moon. That's the part that I think our young people don't have an understanding of that process. And the biggest difficulty we have at the moment in the school stuff is they are not comfortable with working with the orthography and the breakdown of the words and the construction of the sentences. And that's a really difficult message to impart on the young people, because they don't want to do the linguistic-y part of it. They want to do the words. Give me a sentence that means something so that I can say a sentence. And when you try and explain that, once you memorize the sentence, a year from now, you're going to ask, what does each word mean? Or someone is going to ask you that. What does each word mean? And you won't know what each word means. But that's where they want to start. And we've not been able to convince them to come back into the schoolroom and do the linguistic analysis of it. Even though it's a very shallow, short form of linguistics, it's a challenge to our community because of the legacy of boarding school trauma and our inability to operate in a schoolroom situation with our language, because people are saying we had an oral history, so why are we doing this on paper? But today's time, we're not oral anymore. We've more or less switched over and evolved into someone that is comfortable with print. So that's the difficult part of trying to get the community to buy into the program as it sits right now.
And why do you think it's important for people in the community to buy into the program and connect with this language?
Well, I think that what's so important is for them to understand how the language is constructed and how sophisticated it is, because we have approximately 500 verbs, and each verb can have affixes to it that could make it mean about 10 different things. 10 different situations can be covered in that just by the affixes. And the language is one of the only things that truly gives you identity and makes you absolutely distinctive from the next person. I can be dressed differently, I can have different coloration, but if all I do is speak English and do things in English, I am no different than anyone else. However, if I speak Hunt Kaminam, there's no one else in the world speaks Hunt Kaminam except the people in the Musqueam Territory. And that's a difficult thing to convince young people who say, I have an identity, I know I'm an Indian. And I ask, is it because the Department of Indian Affairs gives you a status number that you understand you're an Indian? Or what makes you different from a Cowichan Indian or a Stalo Indian? What makes you different? And the only thing that makes you different is the language. And it gives you self-identity, and it ties you to the physical geography of your the area that the language is spoken in. And it also identifies exactly where our people, our ancestors roamed, and where we are today, because we're separated by the reserve system into little enclaves of reserves, where at one time we may have all been in one area or in the whole area without boundaries, as the European has boundaries, very distinct boundaries, exact locations where you're able to move in and out of. However, prior to the reserve system, many of us roamed from here to Yale, or from here down to California, or from here up to the Queen Charlotte's. And there was no exact boundary. You went as a friend, and you were accepted as a friend, or you went as an enemy and had a big fight. So.
And are there particular characteristics of the language itself that help people connect to what you said, this the old traditional ways of life and the way this area was hundreds of years ago?
There is, because if you understand the language, you can understand the stories, because languages are not created before activities or cultural things that happen, or before you see something. You have to do something, and then the word is created around that activity, and then that's where I think when I thought I knew my culture, my mother's culture, very, very well. Until you start to get into the language which describes the actual activity that you're doing, and then all of a sudden, oh, the word makes sense. Then you realize, the word was created after the physical process of doing something. So that's the part that our young people are not aware of, because a lot of our cultural things are described in English. And even though we're doing Hunt Kaminam cultural things, everything is described in English. And then when someone tells you the word and you repeat the word by memory, you don't realize that the word might have four pieces in it or three pieces, and each one has it is describing a different part of maybe a uniform piece. And that's like for spirit dancing, there might be, you see a hair hat every once in a while when we dance the warrior dance. That's called a quick kumos. And what that means is it's the hair from the body, that the hair is plucked from the body. And that's probably from the head hair. So, and all of a sudden, it makes sense. Then there's a woolen one, they call it sayus. And that the word for wool is say. So when it's the wool from the body of the animal. So that all of a sudden, oh, that's why that word is like that. So this is the things that you begin to realize that it really has meaning. And then there's different spots like the name Humatquim. The story, there's a story about a two-headed serpent that comes down and creates the creeks that come down to the foreshore. And wherever that serpent left its droppings, a plant grew. And that was a musqui plant. The people called it a musqui. And Musquium became the name of that area. And today it's the name of our people. So that's where the people from where that grass grows. So that's how we get to be who we are. And that's really what ties us by our language to that area. And also like all the different areas, all the different house sites that go all around the area, they all have a different name. In our language, we have Tsawasan, that's Tsawasan. We have the area Kalachan, which is at the very point where the Museum of Anthropology is. And that's the name of a warrior garrison. So that tells us that's where our warriors were stationed. And then up around the Spanish bank side, we have Tzatzatlum. And that means it's a real cold place. And today when you go there, it's one of the last places, if there's a snowfall, it's one of the last places that the snow melts because it's always in the shade. Then we have Jericho is Ayalmuch, and it means either, it could mean two things. It's a good spring or it's a good piece of land. Dumthamals is like Tatlow Park, and that's where they gathered rocks for slate and sharpening stones. So that's all those names have a meaning. So that's how I think how it ties us to where we come from.
Well, thank you for coming in and telling us about this important work. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Larry Grant. He is a Musqueam elder and an adjunct professor in the University of British Columbia's First Nations Language Program. His email address and a link to the program's website can be found on our website, which is cooperadio.org/redeye.